A New Year's Eve Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rehm, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on December 31, 1990, entitled Face to Face, Now and Then. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
For just a few moments for your reflection and meditation as we prepare to come to the table of our Lord, let me set before you a few thoughts from the passages just read under the theme, Face to Face, Now and Then. Psalm 16 is a beautiful psalm. In the 8th verse, the psalmist says, I have set the Lord continually before me. With him at my right hand, I cannot be shaken. And he concludes the psalm, In thy presence is the fullness of joy. And if there were any Hebrew scholars here tonight, then I wouldn't dare say this, but since perhaps Dawn is the closest we have to it, and she hasn't got her Hebrew Bible, let me suggest that when the psalmist says, before me, it means before my face. And when, at the end of the psalm, he says, in thy presence, it means before thy face. The terms in the original are almost synonymous. Now, the Lord is always before my face. The Lord is always before me. The Lord is present to me, or the presence of the Lord is always there. Like Emmanuel, perhaps, God with us, here, now, I have set the Lord always before me. Now, the Lord present to me. And the psalmist looks forward to the time when he will have the Lord not before his face, but rather when he will be before the face of the Lord. Now the Lord before me, then I before the Lord. Now, in the midst of the ambiguity of the historical situation, I live with a consciousness of God before my face. There is a good Latin phrase, Coram Deo, great little model for life. Coram Deo, before the face of God. And the psalmist says, because I live before the face of God, that is, because the Lord is at my right hand, I am unmovable. It takes something to be able to make a statement like that, to be unmovable in the swim of history, in the uncertainty, the unpredictability of our historical existence. Last year, I suggested at this hour that taking one calendar down and putting another up was no big deal because that wasn't the important time anyway. And that's true. There is a more important time. There is God's time, the time of God's inbreaking and the rhythm of the Christian year. That's far more important than January, February, March, April, May, and all of that. But nonetheless, we do live in this other world that is marked by 12 months, 365 days, and that does become a sign to us that time is passing. Time is moving, time like an ever-rolling stream bears all its sons and daughters away. We are caught up in the midst of this ongoing drama, and we are in the stream of history, and being in the stream of history, we can't get out of it and somehow or other get a perspective on it. When you're in the middle of the stream, you don't know where the curves are up ahead or what the path ahead or the stream ahead may bring to pass. I really don't like to fly out of Muskegon. I hope there's no one here from the local airport. It's just that I don't like to get into those little airplanes that are wired together that remind me of my model airplane days. But there is one advantage of flying out of Muskegon. It is that there is no plane that flies out of Muskegon that can get up very high, so that the landing cannot be very hard. Well, not seriously. It is because you go over this local landscape, and I do enjoy it. The other, a few months ago, I was about 100 feet off the sand dunes going all the way down the lake, and I waved at Nancy, but she wasn't looking. But it's nice to see Spring Lake with all of its little fingers, and you see the Grand River coming in, and then all of the rivers on down the coast. From that height, which is not very great, one gets a perspective. One can see the meandering of the stream and the curves and get a sense of the whole. But you know, you can't do that when you're just human like we are, living in the stream of history. What will tomorrow bring? We simply don't know. Or the year 1991. We really need a stable point for the compass of our lives. We need an anchor. We need something by which to set sail, to find direction. Something that doesn't move with the movement of time in which we are caught up. And the psalmist found that in the eternal God. I have set the Lord always before me. Because He is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. That's what we need. For we really don't know what will happen with the world. 12 months from now, will we be here? Will we be worshiping in a world at peace or a world at war? And some of you may have business decisions to make as the year rolls over, and you'll have to gather the best data you can and make the best judgments you can, but there's always risk. There's nothing certain. And in terms of our own relationships and our own families, what will the year bring? Hard to say. And our own lives. So much ambiguity. We don't know, do we? To live, to be human, and to be in the stream of history is to live with limited knowledge and partial insight. And we don't really even know ourselves. And sometimes that's painful. As I look at you tonight, I know that in all of you there's a hero or a heroine. In all of you there's nobility, idealism, a great reservoir of goodwill, a readiness for self-sacrifice and giving. And I know as well There's a shadow side in you. Do you ever dare look at it? Do you ever really, honestly face that shadow side that erupts from time to time? Thank God most of the time we keep it under, but those of us who have a hero and a heroine in us, full of nobility and idealism, wouldn't we be horrified if all of the thoughts and intents of our hearts were written on some billboard somewhere? I remember years ago hearing in a sermon a statement that someone made that in all of us there is kind of a secret joy at the fall of our best friend. And I thought that can't be true. Not of me. We're a mixed bag, aren't we? Perhaps the most eloquent statement I've ever read of that is in the poem by Dietrich Bonhoeffer, which I have shared with you from time to time over the years, and yet such an eloquent statement. The poem, "Who Am I?" He's in prison, a Nazi prison camp. "Who am I? They often tell me I stepped from my cell's confinement calmly, cheerfully, firmly, like a squire from his country house. Who am I? They often tell me I used to speak to my warders freely and friendly and clearly, as though it were mine to command. Who am I? They also tell me I bore the days of misfortune equitably, smilingly, proudly, like one accustomed to win. Am I then really all that which other men tell of? Or am I only what I myself know of myself, restless and longing and sick, like a bird in a cage, struggling for breath as though hands were compressing my throat, yearning for colors, for flowers, for voices of birds, thirsting for words of kindness, for neighborliness, tossing in expectation of great events, powerlessly trembling for friends at an infinite distance, weary and empty at praying, at thinking, at making, faint and ready to say farewell to it all? Who am I? This or the other? Am I one person today and tomorrow another? Am I both at once? A hypocrite before others and before myself, a contemptibly woebegone weakling? Or is something within me still like a beaten army fleeing in disorder from victory already achieved? Who am I? They mock me, these lonely questions of mine. Whoever I am, thou knowest, O God, I am thine. The psalmist said, I have set the Lord always before me. I live my life before the face of God. Bonhoeffer says, when I don't know anymore, I know only one thing. O God, I am thine. Paul said, the very nature of our historical existence that we simply don't know. We see puzzling images as in a mirror darkly. We need some reference point. Coram Deo, before the face of God. But if we're in the stream of history, the stream is going somewhere. And whence is it going? And whither will it end? The psalmist said, at thy right hand, there are pleasures forevermore. In thy presence is fullness of joy. The Old Testament is not very eloquent about the future, about the end, and then what? But this is one of the few references that anticipates life then face to face in fullness of joy. And Paul said, one day, when we move beyond this stage of puzzling images and limited knowledge, one day, we will see face to face. Then I shall know, even as also I am known. Then the mystery will be cleared up. Then that which confuses me now, which torments me now, which causes me to cry out, who am I, this or the other? Then, finally, face to face, I will know even as also I am known. And when all things come to their consummation, then there will be a new heaven and a new earth, and the new Jerusalem will come down out of heaven from God as a bride adorned for her bridegroom. And there will be a voice, behold, I make all things new. And then I saw a city, and through the midst of the city there flowed a river as of crystal. And on the banks of the river there were trees, with the leaves of which were for the healing of the nations. And the apostle says, we shall see him face to face. Face to face, now. I have set the Lord always before me. Therefore, in the midst of all the ambiguity and the puzzlements and the contortions and the distortions and the distress, nonetheless, Coram Deo, before the face of God, now. And then, face to face, in shalom, knowing finally, as I am known. And in the communion liturgy, there's that marvelous phrase with which I invite you to come and to take the tangible sign of Emmanuel, God's presence here and now, the bread and the cup, that marvelous phrase that gives us bread and cup to taste and touch, promising us that one day, with unveiled face, we shall behold him. As John wrote, beloved, the amazing love of God is this, that now he has made us the children of God. And it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. Take bread and cup. It is the pledge to you that one day the Lord who is present with you will bring you into his presence face to face. now and then. It's enough.